From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Nelson Strobert.
Today my guest is Dr. Eric Crump, who is a systematic theologian and independent scholar. Welcome to The Seminary Explores.
Good to be here.
Well, this is our annual Top 10 Stories in Religion for 2013, and I'm going to, I guess, start with number 10 on your list of top stories.
I would prefer to start with number 1.
Oh, okay.
We're going to take a more chronological approach.
Okay.
I think the first one that I would mention is the resignation of Pope Benedict XVI, former Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, from the papacy. The first pope to in over 600 years to resign due to claims concerning health and
okay.
to ensure that the church wouldn't suffer from having a papacy that had an incumbent with poor health, declining health.
Well, that indicates that there's a changing paradigm in terms of the pope, the status of the pope. That is, usually we hear the people around the world wait for the decline and ultimate death, and this certainly has changed.
Well, it's a change in sort of what had been sort of the custom, but it's not a change in terms of the paradigm of it's something that there was always, in terms of canon law, the possibility of. But just he's the first pope to avail himself of that in over 600 years.
Right, which is a long time
yes,
for us.
But at least he didn't have to resign in terms of explicit scandals, though. The later years of his papacy were marked by controversy, and especially in terms of relationship to clerical sexual abuse of children and financial scandals within the Curia and the Vatican.
Yeah, which the new pope will have to deal with.
Yes, that's my second item, the election of... former Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio of Argentina to the papacy as Pope Francis Pope Francis I.
Mm-hmm.
That is remarkable in many ways. He is one. He's the first pope from Latin America, and two, he is the first Jesuit that has been a pope.
What do you see as the significance of the first Jesuit becoming pope?
I think that in terms of the Jesuit order is marked by a certain, you could say, spiritual esprit de corps and to discipline. In many ways, the Jesuit society emerged in order to be... to defend and build up the church in many ways, especially through teaching and dealing with whatever particular challenges confronted the church at a particular time. And I think the election of Pope Francis signifies sort of a renewed commitment to confront or address particular challenges, but also to do one that encourages an emphasis upon action.
Okay. So, in a sense, he follows in the Jesuit tradition.
He follows in the Jesuit tradition, but by taking the name of Francis,
mm-hmm.
it signifies also that he is going to be one who's going to speak out on behalf of economic justice for the poor. And in fact, his first papal message dealt with the issue of economic justice and inequality.
Exactly. okay, top story number 3.
Three would be follow in terms of that, and that would be precisely the reforms that are being undertaken in terms of a breath of new fresh air, not only in terms of the papacy, but in terms of the Vatican and the Curia, remarkable sort of ripple effects that I've undertaken, major changes in terms of appointments of people at certain positions, but also one that's taking sort of the reform of the Catholic ecclesial structures out of the hands of the Curia in terms of the special commission that he called for advising reforms that need to be undertaken.
Yeah, which means that I think we all will be anxious to hear what they report out to the public and what changes they recommend for the Curia. Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, number four.
Number four, this is, I think, sort of maybe more peculiar to members of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. But there was the change in terms of election of a new presiding bishop, the first woman to be elected presiding bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church at its churchwide assembly in Pittsburgh this past year.
Yeah, well, that's significant in that the preceding bishop had been there for 12 or more years?
12 years.
12 years, which, and there was a, not controversy, but there was a, it was an exciting election in that he chose to run again, to put his name in for a third term.
Yes, and as an eyewitness to the events that transpired there, it was a incredible that in terms of the number of women who were nominated and who made it to the final round of candidates.
Okay, and you said you were eyewitness. Could you explain to our listening audience how you were an eyewitness to this?
I had been elected to be a voting member from one of the regional synods of the ELCA.
Okay.
Lower Susquehanna.
Okay, so it must have been a tremendous outpouring of enthusiasm upon that the final vote.
Yes, sort of the closest analogy would be if say Hillary Clinton is elected as president of the United States.
Exactly. As you anticipate the future of the ELCA, what do you see as the contribution, or what might you see the task of this new bishop? Bishop Eaton.
In many ways, I think it's continuing challenges in terms of the economic situation that is affecting the ELCA as well as all other denominations. But how to sort of consolidate and retrieve certain emphases in terms of the mission of the church.
Okay. Well, number five, halfway through.
I would talk about is the increasing tension between Islam in the Middle East, between Sunni and Shiite religious factions within Islam. These are partly also mirrored in terms of the Syrian civil war that's taken place, as well as regional tensions between Iran and the rest of the Middle East that are increasing in Iraq, the amount of sort of inter-Muslim religious violence.
Right. And certainly while it's happening overseas, I would think that we might see some of that tension exhibited here in the United States among Muslim groups.
Some tension, yes, and there were sort of like two bombings in terms of in London as well as in Boston in terms of religious terrorism.
Right.
But I think that it's going to become a much more sort of tensive factor in the future. This is also related to sort of like what I would list as my sixth story, which has to do with the controversy that was generated in terms of Reza Aslan, who an Iranian-American Muslim, who wrote a book on Jesus of Nazareth that created quite a bit of controversy, especially in the media and in terms of Fox News, by writing a book that argued that Jesus was a zealot, rebelling against Roman authorities in Palestine.
Yeah, I would think certain media groups would find that, and conservative groups might find that very upsetting.
Well, it's very upsetting, especially in terms of it didn't give the emphasis to using sort of traditional sources, such as in the Synoptic Gospels and the New Testament, but rather to accounts by classical Roman historians and Josephus's account, which upset more conservative elements.
Okay, next.
This is one I think is significant in terms of sort of the passing of a generation of certain religious scholars, and especially two that I would lift up who had who were quite significant for the critical voice of sociology of religion. Okay. In the United States, namely Robert Bella.
Oh, yes.
As well as Father Andrew Greeley.
Okay, could you share with our listening audience what you think are their contributions to the religious conversation?
Well, Robert Bella came to notice in the 1960s with his discussion of the category of civil religion. Mm. And later, in terms of his book that he co-wrote with a team called Habits of the Heart.
Right.
That talked about what were sort of religious trends within the United States. And Andrew Greeley, who especially with his social research wing and the associated with the University of Chicago, studied especially developments within the growing emergence of American Catholicism in the United States, but just quite significant for critical voices.
Right, and it'd be interesting to see who are the new voices, who are those voices, or who are those scholars who will replace them.
Yes.
Okay, moving right along. I think we're up to,
eight.
Number eight, right?
This is sort of more a also related to sort of sociological trends in terms of religious belief, but the Pew Trust,
right,
released a study that revolved around questions about who is a Jew and the issue of Jewish identity in the United States.
Yes.
Their study that noted that for the first time, more than 1 in 5 American Jews profess no religious affiliation or practice, even though Jewish identity remains strong. But this is quite a significant shift in terms of what one might call secularization in terms of the Jewish tradition.
Right, right. It's as you say that, I just came from Brooklyn, where you know there's a large pockets of Jewish community, mm-hmm. many Jewish communities, and it's hard to see that when you see so many Orthodox Jews in Brooklyn. But we're looking at universal Judaism.
Yes, and this it's one of the factors that has fueled this question has been the growing trend for intermarriage between Jews and non-Jews,
right.
That has in some sections exacerbated the issues.
Okay. Let's go to number nine.
Number nine has to do sort of with the growing controversies in terms of religion and law in the United States, especially related to sort of, you could say, court cases in terms of marriage, and especially the legalization of gay marriage in many states, as well as challenges to religious exemptions from certain laws, such as the so-called Affordable Health Care Act,
or right.
more commonly referred to as Obamacare, and concessions that the government has made to religious parties, and but also the attempt for many, especially Catholic affiliated groups seeking exemptions from
exactly. those statutes. And certainly I think that will continue to be in the news as we embark on this new year.
Yes, yes.
Very much so.
And it's also sort of, you could say, more recently in terms of the decision of the federal court in Utah and for rendering the state of Utah's delegitimization of marriage between
the same-sex partners.
Same-sex partners that is now in a state of limbo.
Right, exactly. Okay, we come to number 10.
Number 10 is almost, it's sort of like it's news that was not news this past year.
Okay.
And this has to do with the issue between religion and economic justice. Even though Pope Francis issued a message regarding economic justice and the problem of economic inequality, it's one that was not widely voiced in terms of many sort of denominations, partly in terms of many religious denominations are facing economic challenges. And there is sort of an interesting sort of tension between one can talk about religion and various social issues,
right?
But the one that is sort of
fundamental, or that undergirds
that sort of is critical, at least in the Christian tradition, with his call to sort of care for the poor, and yet there does not seem to be the same urgency that other issues.
Exactly. And I wonder whether that's going to become become more prominent or more visible as the new year begins, as we struggle.
I think it's more. It'll become more prominent whether, but many denominations, I think also the issue of religion and economics is so like the one news that one doesn't hear of very often is how economic issues are affecting sort of issues related to religious and theological education in the United States. And this is something that cuts across in terms of the declining number of clergy, people studying for the ministry, in terms of the costs
exactly
that they have to require, and is an issue that's going to be long-standing.
Very much so, very much so. I cannot believe that, excuse me, that our time is out. My guest today has been Dr. Eric Crump, systematic theologian and independent scholar, and he has contributed to our annual Top 10 Stories in Religion. For The Seminary Explorers, this is Nelson Strober. Have a good day.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explorers from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.